You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me now is Thanos Papasavas, who's the founder and CIO of ABP Invest. He's speaking to us from London, and from London we're going to go to the Middle East and then even further east after that, because he sent me a piece, and the first line of that piece says, "Not alarmed about Turkey and Syria." You may not be alarmed, Thanos, but I think it's sent some ripples through the geopolitical world.
It is, because it's in a very volatile area. It is not just Turkey and Syria in the area. Obviously, we have Iran, we have Saudi, we have Israel, we have Lebanon. So it's the broader region, I think, which sends the ripples down one's spines. As far as the Turkey and Syria situation is concerned, really the underlying view is that there are two deterrents to Turkey proceeding in this potential campaign. The first deterrent is related to economic sanctions, which the US and the EU could impose. The second deterrent is Russia's Putin.
Yes.
And I believe that it's the second deterrent which will really make the difference. Because if we were to consider any potential sanctions from the US and the EU, well, you know, President Trump really gave the nod to Erdogan because he really needed to take out the troops back out of the region and into the U.S. So we don't expect any significant sanctions coming out of the U.S. In terms of the EU, again, the EU cannot be that aggressive with Turkey, because Mr. Erdogan holds the keys to potential floodgates of 3.6 million Syrian refugees. And the minute those refugees come anywhere near the Europe, then we will see again a resurgence of nationalist politics, of the AfD, and as a result, a potential risk to the single currency and to the EU project.
Isn't it quite distasteful? Sorry to interrupt you, Thanos, but isn't it slightly distasteful that the leaders that are constantly at the forefront of giant media organizations like CNN and BBC, etc., are using people and using their own political influence in order to further their own gains? The fact that the president of Turkey, Erdogan, has used 3.6 million refugees as a bargaining tool, I find it really distasteful and actually rather disturbing.
Well, that's not new. This has been going on for a number of years, and it has been one of the reasons why Merkel supported Erdogan in his second attempt of the presidency, and she did visit Istanbul at the time. It is very important to maintain that relationship at a distance, but still open communications, because the Europeans are worried about that, and Erdogan has threatened it in the past, and he does receive a significant, not he, the country receives a significant amount of payment for the refugees.
Okay, well, let's get on to the next thing. I interrupted you. Carry on,
yes,
please.
So I was saying that's the first deterrent, which is not really that significant in my view. The real deterrent from this escalating and creating a significant crisis in the region is, I believe, Putin, who has maintained a very strong loyalty with Syria. Putin also has remained a very loyal relationship with Iran. And the building relationships between Turkey and Russia, as we've seen with the recent S-400 missiles, is something which will contain Turkey. So I believe that Putin will be involved dramatically in order to contain Turkey and find some compromise between those two states.
Your second line of the piece that you kindly sent me says the following: the end is nigh, turning positive GBP. In other words, it's a Brexit story, which I still find fascinating. I still think between now and the 31st there's going to be a few twists and turns, Thanos.
Yes, they will be. And the issue is whether Boris Johnson manages to persuade the DUP, the Northern Irish Party, to find some elements of a compromise, and what would be the cost in terms of monetary support in order for them to agree to those terms. It's similar to pre-May, previous to that. In order for her to have a coalition, she did provide some support to Northern Ireland, and it's no different that Boris will be doing the same. However, I think what has created a bit of a twist and has pushed, I believe, the EU in favor of a deal is that the EU has realized, should they push beyond the deadline, should they push Boris to extend the deadline until January, this will immediately create an election in the UK.
Yeah.
And due to Corbyn not being a favorable candidate across the majority of Labour, he's unlikely to become the next Prime Minister. So even if the EU were to push ahead with an extension for the end of January, it is very likely that Boris Johnson would yet again become the Prime Minister with a coalition with the Brexiteers and Nigel Farage's party. And then the risk of a no deal increases even further.
Is there any chance of a deal between now and the 31st? This is the question I need to know.
Yes. Yes, yes, I think there will be a deal between now and the 31st. And hence why, after having been negative sterling from 132 in March, when I felt that the market was very complacent, I believe that the end is nigh and it's slightly more positive than it has been.
Very good indeed. I mean, they've only had 3.5 years, so and we're getting down to the last 2 weeks. It's quite extraordinary. Oil and Iran, that's an interesting one, because occasionally we get a missile fired here or a tanker being commandeered there. It's a very volatile situation. Is Iran behind this? Do you think Iran is goosing up the market in order to increase its revenues?
Well, Iran is on the bad side of the negotiating table. It is not Iran's decision for the U.S. sort of taking a step back after President Trump came on board. So it was the U.S. which reneged on the deal. And what Iran is basically doing is saying, listen, we are willing to negotiate, but on the right terms, and let's try to put something proper in place rather than just a photo shoot. And that's where, again, I believe that Putin is instrumental in trying to bring that back on the table. But more recently, also, we've been seeing President Macron of France trying to be a little bit more active on that. France have been making some initial areas and moves within Iran. And I think with the expulsion of Bolton, there could be, again, some signs of some discussions. But at the end of the day, I don't believe that the price of oil will be significantly different from where it is today. The price of oil is very much more in the hands of U.S., Saudi, and Russia rather than Iran.
And also the world economy, I would imagine. And to me, it looks vulnerable to the downside, apart from the occasional spike because of geopolitical issues. But that's just me. Let's have a look at, if we can, the other thing that you say here. And that is Trump's not going anywhere, which interests me strangely. In other words, do you think he's going to get re-elected in 2020? What do you mean by that?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm, as one cannot be very confident, of course, with these developments in geopolitics, but I'm fairly confident that as long as the U.S. economy continues to do well, President Trump will be re-elected again. And that is something I've been saying for over a year. And contrary to market expectations, I also expected him to get voted in back in 2016. So I think that has not changed. There's three reasons why I think he's going to be re-elected. Number one, I think that the U.S. economy will continue to do well. And if there's any signs of weakness, he's going to certainly ease his rhetoric to ensure that the economy does well. So the economy should be doing well. Secondly, his polls are close to 90s across the Republicans. He's maintained very much the support within the Republican Party of the conservative members. And third, possibly most interesting of all, is that there is no unifying candidate amongst the Democrats.
Yeah.
Biden is gone, in my view. He's lost. The trajectory was already weakening versus Warren, and the latest developments with Ukraine have really knocked him out, I believe. So with Warren coming in, she's quite left of center from within the Democratic Party. I don't believe that she represents the various factions that exist, and neither does Biden, to be fair. He's a white 76-year-old wasp. It does not represent the Democratic Party.
Hmm.
And in order for the Democratic Party to win on the day, they need to go out and vote. They need to have passion. They need to go out and vote. And unless they have someone that represents them, it's unlikely to be the case. So for that reason, for these three reasons, I believe that Trump is most likely to be back in November 2020. And he'll ensure that if there are any wiggles in the U.S. economy, he's going to ease some levers or put some pressure to try and correct that.
Yeah, I did see one chap the other night. He had his own CNN town hall 1 hour, and his name was something. He was an ex-hedge fund manager, and he sounded really, really credible. In fact, of all the Democratic potential candidates, he looked really good. But as you say, it's a pretty sorry bunch that they've got there, and Mr. Trump is the cleanest dirty shirt, as they say.
Yes.
Markets, what do you think?
Markets, I believe that there's been a lot of negativity in markets surrounding the Sino-US relations, the trade tensions. In my view, these will be gradually eased off as we're heading towards the end of this year, so that 2020 reduces the risk of US recession. Consumers are relatively buoyant. Unemployment rate in the US, 50-year lows. We saw the data overnight from the US, from JP Morgan, credit cards, relatively positive consumer data. In terms of the manufacturing, yes, they've been down. They've been weak. Brookings, OECD, IMF, World Bank, they've all been reducing their expectations and the forecasts for the world economy. But I believe that's already in the price. We already know that. And that has been because of the trade tensions. If, which is what I believe, if we do see an easing of the tensions, then a lot of that should gradually start to reverse. And countries such as Germany, which is one of the most open economies countries in the world, should be able to benefit. And hence why I prefer the German DAX, for example, to the CAC 40.
Is there an opportunity in the UK, my final question, because of the rarefied atmosphere that is suddenly condensing towards the 31st of October? Do you think that there is an opportunity to get long, get short? Because something's going to give, Thanos. I can just feel it.
Yeah, I think as when we started the discussion, I'm turning positive on sterling. I think that sterling offers value at these levels. From a medium to long-term perspective, as assuming that there is a deal which takes place. In terms of the underlying economics, again, consumer sentiment has held on very well in the UK, despite the ongoing uncertainty. Even the breakdown, we had the collapse of Thomas Cook, the travel agency, that was not due to Brexit. It was predominantly due to their erroneous business model of focusing on stores rather than the internet, and also their financial modeling. So consumer sentiment remains good. House prices have come off the high significantly. So real estate may be an opportunity in the UK, especially for foreign investors who are also looking to benefit from the weaker pound.
Thanos, thanks so much for your insight. That's Thanos Papasavas, who's the founder and CIO of ABP Invest, speaking to us from London. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.